Inside Out, The Naked Truth, where we explore everyday issues to discover their core truth, so we may understand them, open our hearts to them, add a little more fun in our lives, and see it all from another perspective.
Tonight's show is coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in Los Gatos, California, where the clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
I am Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And I am Errol Strider. And together we will explore these truths through humor, conscious conversation. Well, we'll be as conscious as we can. Poetry, music, skits, and your comments, hopefully, because you can call in at 888. Get your pen. Come on, get ready. 888-627-6008. We really want you to participate in this conversation.
Tonight's show is brought to you by Go Raw, 100% natural, organic raw food that not only tastes good, but is good for you.
Go Raw can be found in Whole Foods and the organic section of Costco. Did you know there was an organic section of Costco? As a matter of fact, all the employees that work there, they have to pass the organic test. We can't have any inorganic people displaying these products. So go to goraw.com to find a store near you and find out more about these delicious, healthy, nutritious products by Go Raw. Go Raw products. Thank you for supporting our show.
Tonight we're going to be talking about change, especially why should we change? Why change? If everything's okay, why make it better?
Could be worse. Could get worse.
Because I change all the time. I mean, most of us do too. We adapt to our surroundings, relationships, situations, without thinking I am changing. The fact is, I am uncomfortable with change. I'm a nester. I like to stay put. Once I fix something, I want it to stay that way. I don't want to change it at all.
Yeah, you fixed me, remember? And we tried to keep it the same way, and it just didn't stay that way.
No, well, that's what keeps it interesting anyway. I mean, this year, we left our home of 16 years, sold and stored all our stuff except essentials, and opened ourselves up to changing locations, lifestyles, activities. We hugged neighbors and friends goodbye, preparing ourselves to welcome new people into our lives. Well, here we are at Lupin Lodge, and yes, everything about our lives is different. We live in the woods, in a cabin, one room with a dressing room, bathroom. We've adapted, made it homey, comfortable. We have a different bed, dishes, sheets, even new clothes, new activities, and wonderfully new friends. What I am learning, and here is where I am being called to change attitudes. I am becoming more tolerant, seeing deeper than ever into people's pain and their souls, seeing the innocence that lies under so much cynicism, becoming aware of what must change in me to survive in my new setting, and what is to remain intact for the same reason. To live AA's commandment, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. To see where fear leads me into emotional pain and be willing to let it go, even though it is familiar, and if I change, life could get worse. But to take the chance that the bottom is just a stepping stone to moving up. To be willing to change, to see it differently, to trust that that willingness can only be beneficial to my growth and the expansion of my consciousness and soul. So I am willing to change.
In case you haven't noticed it by now, our show, Inside Out, The Naked Truth, is really about becoming enlightened. Now, for simplicity's sake, let's just describe enlightenment as being aligned with what's so? You remember what's so, don't you? What's so invented everything and underlies everything, including what seems to be what's so. And that seeming what's so can occupy much of our life with very little profit. At a certain point in life, some of us get the itch for what's really so. That's what's so times infinity. Big number. Start counting. But as it turns out, that shift of orientation requires us to change fundamentally. According to A Course in Miracles, strengthening the motivation to change is the first step. To change your motivation from what it may have been to one where you're motivated to become aligned with the basic universe patterns and directions, i.e., the patterns of love and creation. As David Bowie sings in his song, Changes, change doesn't come easily and is not always welcome. But come what may, change is on the way. It can be chosen or forced on us by, well, circumstances. So that is always our choice. Okay. The good news is that we do get to choose, at least when we start the change, or at least start the process. And we also get to choose how we can make those changes artful, graceful, and even fun. So this is what our show is about tonight, is making those changes. And speaking of David Bowie, let's hear what he has to sing about changes.
Waiting for, and my time was running wild in the indented streets. And every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test of
changes. Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
I wanna be a richer man.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
It's gonna have to be a different man.
Time may change me.
Size, but never leave the stream of warm permanence. And so the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same. And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
Don't tell them to grow up out of it.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
Where's the shame you've left us up to our next event?
Time may change me.
You can't twist time. Strange fascination.
David Bowie sings, I still don't know what I was waiting for, and my time was running wild. A million dead-end streets. Every time I thought I'd got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take the test. And this is a piece that Rochelle's going to share with you that was written many years ago. And it's about someone going through a process that leads them to major change. This character certainly has had her motivation to change strengthened, as you will hear. The piece is entitled, Today I'm a Child. Sit back, enjoy, and go on this ride.
Tonight, we're dedicating this piece to Neva. Today, I am a child. I have been all day. Oh, okay, you may think that's strange, but you see, I found it's better to be a child. For the longest time, I thought I was an adult, until I found out it didn't work. An awful lot is expected. I mean, you have to be knowledgeable, wise, responsible, and take things seriously. Oh, I did that one for a long time, until I forgot how to laugh. Because most of my friends were adults, but they seemed okay at it. For some reason, I wasn't very successful. I began wondering if I were really qualified. I mean, it's pretty easy to be an adult when things are going well. But when it all starts to fall apart, well, it becomes a little more difficult. my husband left me. Okay, up to that time, I thought I was quite good at managing my life. But when Hal left, I began to experience something which I knew as an adult I should not experience. Helplessness. Oh, that was my first hint of ineptitude. But I don't think I was too conscious of it then. I was still very busy trying to maintain my image as an adult. And then Charlie got sick. Oh, Charlie's my little boy. You see, before when he had been sick and Hal had been there, well, it was easy to be competent. But when I was alone with a sick child, I felt very small and frightened, because that's no way for an adult to act. I began to sense failure, because I didn't feel small and helpless enough to give up, though. Oh, no, I forged right ahead, determined to be a successful adult, until I began running out of money. Money, that is one thing that makes it especially easy to be an adult. Adults have money, kids don't. So when I was supposed to be an adult and I was running out of money, I got very confused. Then I started feeling sorry for myself, which made me feel guilty, which made me feel more alone and helpless and a lot less like an adult. I mean, I was ready to declare bankruptcy, but not quite. There was a part of me that hated giving in, even though everything indicated that my career as an adult was over. Pride. I became especially aware of this facet of my being when someone suggested that I should seek help. Well, I resisted that. I mean, adults had pride, and as long as I had that, I still had a chance. So there I sat in my room, alone, helpless, confused, small, guilty, miserable, and proud. I didn't know what I was proud of, but I figured that if I resisted any help, I still had pride, and that made me an adult, until I began to starve. Oh, okay, not really starve, but living solely on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches doesn't make you any healthier either. And I did get sick, very sick. I thought I was going to die. Have you ever thought you were going to die? Oh, I don't mean saying, oh yeah, I'm going to die, and then laughing it off because you didn't really believe it. I mean, I used to be like that. I really couldn't see how an adult could cease to exist, especially as fine an adult as I thought I was. But this time, I didn't just think it, and that cold, unyielding reality pressed in on me. It was so intense, so final, and immovable that I absolutely could not stand it. And then something happened. I cried, "Help!" And my adulthood began to crumble away beneath me. I began to let go of the idea that I could solve it all by myself. I took my first step toward being a child. I gave up my pride. At first, I was a little frightened. I remembered back when I was a little girl, when I was dependent and had to trust someone bigger than me. Well, where was I going to find something, someone like that now? I talked to a lot of people, but they sure reacted strangely. I guess it sounded kind of funny, someone coming up and asking you, "How do I become a child again?" Well, that's when I started going to groups. I became a regular group freak. I went to every kind of group looking for that missing link. And that didn't work. Well, when that didn't work, I tried drugs and then a guru. I mean, I looked everywhere trying to find my child self. And I was becoming desperate at that point. I wasn't an adult anymore, but I wasn't a child either. I was stranded somewhere in the middle without an identity, bumbling along from one thing to another, hoping to find, searching for that assurance and security I had lost as an adult, wanting so much to be able to grow again and explore as a child. I've been running around looking for the answer in so many different places. I finally became exhausted. I was back in my room. Charlie was sick again. My welfare check was late. My friends were all away. And I was alone. I don't know whether it was because of the exhaustion being alone or what. I don't know. But that night, I experienced the most absolute kind of despair. Hopelessness. I had no hope. And it was in that one split second of time that I understood what had been missing. It wasn't so much that I got the idea or the answer. It was just that that something that was missing was no longer missing. And from that point on, I have been a true child. Oh, it's really amazing that it escaped me for so long. But that night, when I realized what it was, oh, well, what can I say? But you know, you can't really be a child without a parent, can you? How can anything so real and so beautiful be so hard to see? Yes, today I am a child. I have been all day. But before that night, I must have been blind. And sometimes I wonder, why was that?
Changes, they're long overdue. has led me down this road. My heart is weary, I feel the heavy load. Somehow, some way, darkness led me to your light. I've run out of lies, Lord, I'm begging you, please. I can't stand the pain. I'm down on my knees. There'll be some changes. Yeah, long overdue. There'll be some changes. Oh, what I need to do. There'll be some changes. Some changes. There'll be some changes. Yeah, long overdue. There'll be some changes. But what I need to do, there'll be some changes. Some changes.
Was that
Chubby Checker?
Chubby Checker?
Go Chubby on. Checker. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Changes in my life. How about
some
that?
Changes in my life, huh?
Well, we've
very nice. I wanted to talk a little bit about the piece that. Well,
okay, I want to talk about it too. But before we do that, let's remind people about who we are.
Okay, I don't know. Who are you?
Well, I was going to say, I'm this isolated mortal on this revolving body of matter, wondering. Every day I get up and I wonder and I wonder. And but for the time being, I'm being called Errol Strider.
And I think I'm being called Rochelle, Alicia Strider.
On the good days. And yep. You're listening to Insight Out, The Naked Truth. And we're broadcasting from Lupin Lodge, where clothing is optional, actually.
But the truth is always naked.
And
we are sponsored by Go Raw, which is an incredible raw food.
Yeah, based right here in San Jose.
Right.
So, you wanted to say some things about the piece?
Yeah, because, you know, like, it's everyone has a definition of God. You know, in fact, some people have an anti-God definition of God, or negative definition of God. But people call God all sorts of things. And this piece sort of refers to God, I think, as parent. Of course, a loving, all loving, totally loving, unconditionally kind of God. I like to think of God, if there's, you know, that word, I like the mystery. Because the truth is, no matter how far your mind can take you into the infinite, it's finite, and the finite can't get very infinite at all. And if there is a God at all, it's certainly infinite. But I had a teacher in high school, in college, who used to call God Gaudi, and it made a very personal relationship with her and this mystery, this infinite cosmic energy, whatever you want to think of as God. But she would call God Gaudi, and that was my favorite word.
So Gaudi, if you're listening.
And Helen, if you are listening, wherever you may be, dear Ivan.
I wanted to share this little story from the Arantia book, actually, and it's been extremely influential in my own journey. And I like to think of this story as, how do you qualify, so to speak, the spiritual customer, in the sense, who might be ready and motivated to change? Well, as the story goes, the master was walking down the street with one of his apostles, and he passed by one of the guys hanging by the road and didn't talk to him. And evidently, based upon what was said, the apostle said, "Master, you usually engage people in conversation when you walk by him. And this fellow, you just kind of passed him by. Why was that?" And his answer was very instructive. And here's where I believe are the kind of criteria which you can ask yourself if you're listening. He said, well, number one, he wasn't dissatisfied with himself. Number two, he wasn't hungry for the truth. We talked a little bit about truth our first night, but we're always going after the naked truth. The third thing he said, he wasn't willing to ask for help. And lastly, the eyes of his mind were not open to receive light for his soul.
Oh, I like that line a lot.
So here we go. Let's kind of have a quick review. And remember, you can call in and have conversation with us at 888-627-6008. But let's review that. He wasn't dissatisfied with himself. So then the question is, are you dissatisfied with yourself? Which is different than are you dissatisfied with circumstances? I mean, we all could moan and gripe about various circumstances, but being dissatisfied with yourself, I think in that song, Chubby Checker sang Changes. I think that was a person who was dissatisfied with himself, as was the first song, David Bowie's song, where he turned it around and faced himself.
Well, you know, there's a thin line between dissatisfaction with self and shame. You know, I think that we are dissatisfied with ourselves if we are. Matthew McConaughey won an Oscar on Sunday, and he said something really lovely in his acceptance speech. He said, "His hero is always 10 years in the future, in the sense that he can always get better." So that kind of dissatisfaction with self is like you can always get better. But the kind of dissatisfaction with self that leads to shame is like, I'm not good enough. I'm not important enough. I don't have enough to offer the world. That's a shameful kind of dissatisfaction, and I don't think you move from that. I think what happens with that kind of dissatisfaction with yourself is it's like it becomes your identity.
But it also can be the catalyst for a shift. Like, I've often thought that often humiliation comes just prior to humility, and sometimes maybe when the shame gets intense enough or that self-loathing gets intense enough, we change. As a matter of fact, I remember reading, again, referencing the Urantia book, there's this section, kind of a reinterpretation of the book of Job. It's very interesting and very worthwhile. And it goes on to say that there was a certain point in which Job was abhorred himself. That was the word.
Abhorred
himself.
Poor Job is dead. I'm sorry.
Poor Job is dead. A candle lights his head. That's a song
from Oklahoma.
It was Judd, dear Judd.
I know. I was making it.
But I like it. I like it. Poor Job is dead. Where he abhorred himself. And
My God, that's really disgusting.
Yeah, like Labord. You look at yourself. Well, I think there's something to be said about there can be such an extreme recognition of the teeny-weeny-weensiness of our being and our utter ignorance in the face of so much that is not known to us, which is practically everything else, that you would ideally surrender and seek change.
That's the part that what makes it work is the surrender to it, because I do think that the more if we identify with our abortiveness, if there's such a word, if we identify with it, we're not willing to give it up so easily, because it's sort of like suicide. It's like committing suicide if you give up your identity. Who are you? So if you may be abhorrent, but that's who you are. You know, you wear this little sign on your T-shirt, you know, I am abhorrent. So people know who you are, right? And then you go to prove it all the time. You have to prove that you're an abhorrent being.
So this brings us to the whole issue of how the part of us that tries to get its identity and its existence by being separate from other things, sometimes called the ego, will get its it get its separation from being the bad guy, the good guy, the poor guy, the rich guy, anything to push off of that which isn't the self according to the definition of the ego. And that's a big part of what this program and this practice is about. We've often referred to tonight, I even quoted A Course in Miracles, and that was very instrumental in helping me understand what the fundamental change really is, and that it's a change from fear to love.
It definitely is. It's definitely that. But I go back to saying that the difficulty in change for mm-hmm. most people is that it has to do with being identified with who you are at a point in time. When it's like, the let going is not just letting go of circumstances or anything else, but it's letting go of how you see yourself. To me,
that's the big one, isn't it?
Right. You know, I wrote this poem for some reason I woke up this morning like at 6 o'clock and I heard this poem in my head and I wrote it down, and it's just, I don't know if it's a poem, but I wrote it anyway. I hear the rattle of the chains that bind me to encrusted past beliefs. I am willing to be free, to move beyond them into the unknown, creating a new now.
Wow.
And I think the more we live in the now, the more we change without resistance or discomfort. I mean, I think the more we are willing to be right here, right now, without pulling up past beliefs, pulling up past identification or past whatever.
Whatever. You got to watch
whatever.
That past whatever.
Because, that's the, you know,
I ran into three or four whatevers today, and every one of them
was. You didn't run them over.
Well, no, they were out to get me.
They were.
Yeah, every one of them. And I'd say, what do you want? And they'd say, whatever, whatever. I don't know. They were like so impossible.
See, you were born in Missouri. I was born in New York.
Whatever.
You say whatever. It doesn't.
It sounds like Missouri saying whatever.
Missouri. Yeah, so that's a motivation for true change is to commit to living in the present. Because, you try to manipulate the future based on the past, and you can't change anything if you're doing that because you're pulling the past into the future. So where's the change going to be? Aha, I got you speechless.
I opened my mouth. And
good for me. I got a point on that one.
Well, half a point, because there was something to go out. I just didn't. Here's what happened. A whole bunch of words all got lined up. And they said, me first. and they couldn't decide amongst them.
Uh-huh.
And so finally, they left me standing there holding.
He wormed himself out of that one, people.
Well, wormed myself out of that one, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one
so
of the.
So what is your motivation to change at any given moment in time?
You're going to get personal,
well,
huh?
Yeah, what else?
Ooh, we're going to get.
What else is there?
All right, let's get down. We're going to get personal. All right, well, I'll tell you what.
Is it taking that long to get personal?
Let's get personal. As a matter of fact, let's get naked.
Huh?
Yeah, we're going to get naked. You know how I know? Listen to the music.
Personal.
Ooh.
Yes.
Just a
minute.
Sun. Oh. Just a minute. I'm taking off my outer layer.
Take off that outer layer.
The part that wants to be seen as a really special, neat guy in love. That's coming off. Now the layer underneath is that, I'm totally embarrassed about my existence. Don't see me. And now I'm zipping the next part, and it's like, I don't know who the hell I am.
All right.
Ooh, that is like squeaky naked. And then finally, we get down there to your basic, well, duh.
All right. Enough of the music. Come on, man. What motivates you to change?
All right. Well, the first thing that really motivated me to change was when I realized I was going to die.
No. That's an amazing awareness. Most people don't think they're ever going to die.
Well, so I had this this perspective. I was actually 23 years old. It was my midlife crisis. Turns out it wasn't my midlife. That was lucky.
Yeah, or you'd already be dead.
Right. But, yeah, I got that I was very mortal, and that no matter how much time may have gone by between now and the time that I will have died, it will seem, you know, basically really inconsequential. So I was very motivated at the very beginning, at least, to find out, like, what else might be as an option. So I started searching through all kinds of places, and it was interesting. The first book I read on my spiritual journey was a book called First Steps
on the Spiritual Journey.
Yeah, something like that. Right. How'd you know? You were there. Okay. First Steps on the Spiritual Journey. And one of the things that one of the chapters is you have to be ruthlessly honest with yourself. And that really struck me. And I remember when I started applying that and started looking at every thought that I had and everything I said and everything I did. And first of all, it was an eye-opener, to say the least.
Yeah, and it's good to walk through life with your eyes open.
Yeah, and a head expander, because I saw how self-deceived and how much deception I actually was capable of during the course of any given day in comparison to just stripping off and being honest with each other, with myself, rather. But what happened to me was, and I want to share a little of it with this poem that I call How Are You? And it's kind of what really got me going. It goes like this. I saw it all in a bare sprinkle of time. All moments of joy, pain, laughter, success, failure, boredom, anxiety, grief, all known experiences of life fled before me like a train running down a dead-end track. My whole life compressed and condensed into 1 second. One minuscule moment containing everything that would happen to me in the next 50, 70, 5 years, 1 year, or 5 minutes. I was catapulted out to the very precipice of my earthly existence, where I stood before the open, never-ending chasm of oblivion.
Whoops.
Whoops. Nowhere out there beyond my dismal corporeal life, beyond this flesh and blood, eating, shitting, fucking body life that I knew, was myself. No matter how far I looked in any direction, I saw nothing. Well, at the behest of my horror, my body just seized me, demanding that I protect it, nurture it, and above all, save it from extermination. With a vice-like grip, it held me hostage until I solved its immutable dilemma, met its demands, and paid its impossible ransom, an open-ended ticket to eternity. Ooh, I was struck dumb with terror at this momentary glimpse into finality, and watched helplessly as all meaning, all pleasure, all value, everything of importance fled from me as I stood naked before the conclusiveness of my own demise.
Heavy.
We're not done.
Go ahead.
Riveted to the spot, I could only tremble as I attempted to suppress the undeniable stench of fear that kept welling up inside of me. But fear's fiery malevolence would not be contained. And the words tore through me as they made their way to the forefront of my consciousness and echoed unmercifully through the grotesque, fleshy grayness of my brain. I'm going to die. There will be no me anymore. Before this life, there was no me, and after my tingling blood sensations quit pounding through my cells, I will be no more. This jarring, obliterating thought precluded everything that would have previously captured my devotion. All my pretensions to identity, to worth and significance, stripped away. My being was denuded, and I fell to my knees in a torrent of my own insignificance. Is this all there is? I cried. And I tried in vain to re-escape into my muddled life and the familiar enticements I so frequently used to dull my awareness of the impending disillusion. Make love to me. Rescue me, I cried to my lovers. Pay me, deliver me, I called to my bank accounts. Nourish and protect me, I begged my plans for power and prestige. Save my ass, I called to an unsubstantiated god buried in Sunday school leftovers and finally destroyed by spiritual disillusionment in the face of never-ending suffering and unstinted hypocrisy.
Wow.
All these inept saviors were like so many senile eunuchs with no sperm to fertilize me, no semen to ignite me, no ecstatic ejaculation to shoot me through the gaping hole. So I searched desperately for some earthly god to take me beyond the grasp of the intractable one. I sought relief through ideas and beliefs and rituals for any possible way to avoid the unavoidable. I tried to transfer myself to something or someone that was immortal, my work, my heroes, my self-importance. But as my mind raced to the ultimate conclusion, I realized that all was lost in the inevitable disintegration of this whole world. Oh! What stances I made up to neutralize the anxiety, to defray the inexorable cost. How I tried to deceive myself into thinking I could escape that final curtain as I insulated myself behind the cold, barren bars of my middle-class insanity, rarely peeking out at life, never risking, knowing I could be taken at any moment, absorbed by my nemesis, at the mercy of its capricious whim. What a miserable creature I felt myself to be as I saw death outmaneuvering me, no matter how fast I ran, how hard I fought, or how I tried to make myself impervious to its insidious clutches. So, what did I do? I pulled back into the media, family, work vacuum, playing it safe in the smugness of my denial. Closed off into the dry, sterile world of blathering unconsciousness, lying profusely each time I was asked, "How are you?" I became immersed in just enough pain to keep me from having to look at the unyielding one, to garner as much pleasure as needed to barricade myself from the innocuousness of this destined to be extinct speck of humanity. So, here you find me now, father, citizen, husband, worker, singing zippity-doo-da, zippity-a. And every time you ask me how I am, I promise I'll lie to you, lest I pull you down into the depths of my despair, where you too might become a witness to the impenetrable darkness and deny me my illusion of escape. So what do I have to say to you? Fine, thanks. And how are you today?
Just before the show started, somebody told us that they loved our show because it was so fun and humorous. Well, we just wanted to show you another side of it all. That is not your story, but that's okay, Errol. That is really depressing.
Really? Really? Depressing?
Yes, I thought it was depressing.
Well, the guy confronts his mortality, and I'm not going to do it tonight, but I will do it on another show. And that is as a result of this motivation to change and as a result of this transformation that I have undergone over the years and the fact that my request was answered, I wrote another poem as a follow-up called I'm Fine. And it really celebrates in a similar kind of style the joys of discovering that I am fine. And that's, you say, what motivated me? Well, I was motivated by desperation and at the same time the hope, I guess, that was somewhere in my system that allowed me to be able to move onward and actually ride the winds of change.
The winds of change.
Follow the Moskwa down to Gonky Park, listening to the wind of change. Summer night, soldiers passing by, listening to the wind of change. We could be so close, like brothers. The future's in the air, can feel it everywhere. I'm blowing with the wind of change.
That was Winds of Change by Scorpion. And as I understand it, we have Tracy from Georgia on the line with a question. Hi, Tracy. Can you hear me? Are you there?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Hello.
Hi. So glad you could be with us. What's your question?
Well, I don't have a question. I wanted to say thank you for your show, and thank you for that constant reminder. You spoke about truth and honesty earlier, and, you know, I just wanted to say thank you for that. It's a constant reminder to me that I can learn from yesterday, but I can't truly accomplish and live out my dreams and my wants if I'm dwelling on yesterday. So I just wanted to say thank you for that. Yesterday is yesterday. I can learn from yesterday, but don't constantly dwell on yesterday. Today is today.
Tracy, that's fabulous. I'm so appreciative that you could share that with us, and that we all need to be reminded. You know, Rochelle reminds me every day. She says, "You clumsy idiot."
I do not. I never call him an idiot. He's too bright. But clumsy, yes.
Yes.
So,
I love what you, the both of you do there, and that's just a constant, that's a great constant reminder, because I'm really big on yesterday, learn from yesterday, but why are you dwelling on yesterday? Today is today. Let's take the lessons from yesterday and be better today.
Makes me want to sing that song, Yesterday. And
yes.
And then, well, Tracy, thank you. How is the weather there in Georgia right now, by the way?
Well, it's getting warmer, but
good.
Who knows what Mother Nature has around the corner. You know, we'll be in the 70s 1 week and then in the 30s another week. But for the most part in the South, it's beautiful weather for the winter. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for calling us. And please go to our website. And this is a reminder to everyone, thelaughingheart.org, where there's lots of reminders to stay in the present. We have 15 videos on YouTube, and you can see us age, actually, because the first one starts when we were like in the womb, I think, or at least 20 years
exactly
ago.
Exactly in the womb.
Near the womb.
Yes.
Anyway, thanks for calling, dear. Lovely to hear from you, and I hope you'll spread the word that we're here and we're doing this show, and we'd love to exchange with as many people as we can who like us, need to be reminded.
And you can go to estrider@gmail.com if you want to talk more to us.
And send us an email. And okay, thank you, dear. This is Inside Out, the Naked Truth.
Oh, Errol loves saying naked.
Not as much as I like being naked. I mean,
Errol really believes that if you don't have to wear clothes, why?
Yeah, why? Why?
And right now it's pretty cold here, so we're wearing clothes.
But it's an option. See, I like living in a place where we have that option. Well, let's kind of review a little bit for those of you who are still listening. We talked about the importance of strengthening the motivation to change if we really want to be enlightened, which is another way of saying if we want to become the fullness of who we are and really embody the love that we are and be that source of love for ourselves and others and life. And life, as I have noticed, when I'm able to live into that love, is very reciprocating.
Yes, it is. And the interesting thing is that I meet a lot of people, you know, who talk about love, and they always have this, like, look on their face like that they've just gotten up or something. It's kind of a dazed look. Like, oh, love. I'm such a loving person. And what I've discovered about love is it has no image. That's why it's so difficult for people to truly be lovers. They have to let go of all images and just be. And if you can define it, it's not love. And just allow yourself to be totally there and totally connected to another person and be peaceful and joyful. And
it's like the statement, if you see the Buddha on the road, kill it.
Right. Love is the same. Yeah. That's the love. Yeah, you know, that's that love.
Because it means that you're living in another time entirely if you see the guy on the road, because he was dead like for a long time. And what are you doing there?
But it's within us. It's within us. Oh, you're so silly. Okay, it's within us.
Master of delusion.
Yes, well, so we're good at that.
We're going to continue next week exploring some of what we believe are really the key issues to waking up and to realizing the self that we were created to be, that replica of the first source and center of reality. And one of the things I've discovered, the degree that I can live into this moment, and as Tracy said from Georgia, the degree that I can not dwell on yesterday, the entire universe opens up to my creativity. And one of the things I've discovered, and this is very close to the pearl of great price that I think Yeshua or Jesus talks about, and that is endless creative possibilities. And that is such a joyful experience. And any of you out there who have the chance to be creative know what a wonderful thing it is to be creative.
I know. And the other thing is that, you know, when we're not sitting and planning stuff and we move into that creative moment, their possibilities really are more than we believe. When we're in fear, we're either fleeing or fighting. That's it. But when you're in love or you're in creative moment, the possibilities are endless. It's not just two possibilities. And you don't know what they
are.
Three and a half. You can count more than 10. I know you can. Put your fingers up. You got five on each hand.
You know, it's interesting, just to follow up on that, and we're going to need to go in just a minute, but when we left where we were living up in Fairfax, California, and people said, well, where are you going? And we told them we're moving, and we would say, we don't know. And this kind of look came over their face like, you don't know? So one of the things that we realize as we abandon ourselves, as I like to say in one of my poems, abandon ourselves to the sterling unseen and the bountiful mystery of light.
I like that.
And when we can do that, then...
You will change.
And the universe just glistens with surprises. As a matter of fact, I sent out a little note to my email list and put it on Facebook, Errol Strider on Facebook, where I show a photograph I took, and the line says, God, surprise me. Show me something I don't already know. And God said, that's easy, because you don't know much. But
you're a little finite being.
Yeah, just
evolving.
A little teeny weensy meensy.
So you're just a little fella. Cute as you may be,
and with infinite potential. That's the irony. So join us again next week, and where we will be taking the next step on this journey. Once we've sort of gotten the motivation to change and strengthened it, what is the first thing we have to do? That's what you're going to find out. That the thing that opens the door into this space of unending expansion of depth and perception called enlightenment. So we'll be back to see you. Please join us. Spread the word.
Tuesday
here we
night,
are.
7 Tuesday. P.m. on the Pacific Standard Time.
On the Pacific Standard Time, which is going to change next week. I think we're going to go on daylight saving. Somebody just told me.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, but it's nobody's fault. It's just what happens. Okay. So, again, we're signing off now. And this is Errol Strider.
And this is Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And thanking you for being with us.
So just be still, be in the now, and you will change.
And you will wake up.